With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I hope they call me on a mission when I have grown a foot or two. I hope by then I will be ready to teach and preach and work like missionaries do.
Welcome to Manic Rambling Spiral. I'm John R. Bray.
And I am Heather B. Armstrong.
And today, we're gonna talk about finances, because that's fun and lighthearted.
It's tax season.
And it's tax season. And finances, I think, are extra fun when you are separated or divorced.
Finances are fun.
And I think it's even, I know it's even more fun when you are separated and financials have not been determined by a court.
Are you in that situation?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's how it's been from the start. So it's not necessarily anything new, but it's always a fun discussion around tax season.
Do you have anything in writing with her concerning finances at all?
No, nothing.
Okay. So this is going to, she could.
See, I told you it'd be fun. It's going
to
be good.
She gets to claim him on her taxes. Yes.
Well, it depends on how you look at it. Technically, from my understanding, you have to provide at least half of the financial, 50% or greater of the financial support. So I guess 51 in order to claim a child.
What? Where do you get that information?
Well, when you're looking at kids, you have to be able to show that you're supporting them for more than half of their needs. And this is from my accountant, but I'm not speaking for people who are divorced. There's a court order, whatever, but you look at who is providing for the child.
Okay.
Because then you get to claim them as a deduction.
No, okay.
Now,
please proceed.
I think, personally, that it's a fairly straightforward situation because I provide more than 50%, like 85 to 90, probably.
Like 91, like 92%.
Yeah.
Yes.
Pretty much, yeah. And, I mean, there are some things that we have split. There are also some things that in theory we're going to split, but that has not happened. And I decided long ago, I might have even mentioned this at one point, that I don't have any desire to really fight about money things with my Heather, with Hex, because it's not worth it. I'd rather just pay for things that Lexton needs and just be done with it, because it's the path of least resistance. But then to do that and arrive at tax season and have to go through negotiations over who's going to claim him, it's just, you know, it's frustrating.
It's very, very frustrating.
Because, like I said, I feel like it's just common sense, but it's clearly not. And there should be something in writing. I mean, I will take shared responsibility for the fact that there isn't something in writing. And I know that there's a lot of different ways that this can go. I have friends who have two kids and each parent claims one. I have friends who flip-flop one year to the next. I know there's options. It's not that, you know, there's no way to do it. It just feels like there's no way.
Well, the question is, does Heather want to, I don't want to call her Hex. It does makes me sound like a witch. Does she want to negotiate with you concerning these options?
Yes and no. So her basic standpoint is that we should switch every year. 1 year I claim him, 1 year she claims him, like that should be how it goes. And if that's the system that we decide to go by, then I would get that in writing.
Okay.
Because it's a pretty reasonable deduction, right? To take
a
kid on your taxes. And I think
that's why all these welfare moms have kids. Don't you know?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Forgot about that. So I feel like if we said yes every other year, then next tax season is going to roll around and, you know, in the back of her mind, it would be, wow, this would be a lot better if I could claim him. And then we'll just go through it again. So I would get it in writing. But from my own small circle and sphere, from what I have heard and seen, I know that when people alternate from year to year, in part, that's because the non-custodial parent is paying child support.
Mm-hmm.
So they're also providing support. And usually that is with some other financial support. You know, if it's part of school tuition, if it's a private school, or, you know, one person pays the medical expenses, whatever. I know there's tons of different ways to do it. But in our case, there is no child support. So there's none of that to factor in.
So yours is a complicated situation, is what you're saying. And you're going through hell trying to figure this out right now.
Yes. Well, I claimed him last year and just assumed, because I provide the vast majority of the support, that 92%. I would claim him again. And when you're self, as you know, as when you're self-employed, mm-hmm. you know, you pay your own taxes. So when, as I've been going through 2016, that's been how I've been going through it. Like, I am claiming him. So then to hit tax season and, oh, maybe I'm not, that just throws everything
off. It's thousands of dollars.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I had a doctor ask me yesterday about, he said, was the change in your mood, was that affecting your ability to do your job? And I said, well, I mean, you know, I did 10 hours on Sunday and then 10 hours on Monday. And he's like, I mean, were you able to do it? And I said, I have to keep my lights on. So however depressed I get or sad I get, I still have to keep the lights on. Like, that's, I somehow, whatever it is that is in my brain, what do they call it? The reptilian brain. It kicks in and it's like, no matter how sad I get, I still have to work as hard as I can in order to keep my lights on, because I am the one taking care of the kids.
Yes. If there wasn't a child relying on me for support, like maybe it would get so bad that you would just stop working. Like, maybe it would be easier to let go if there weren't other people relying on you.
Mm-hmm.
But because you know that it's not only affecting you, you have to keep going.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there really isn't an option.
It's panic inducing, for sure. So there's, you got the depression and then you have the panic, because you can't be depressed.
Right.
Being depressed is some sort of privilege. No, you have to keep going. You still have to get that. You have to meet that deadline.
Yeah, there's no time to be depressed.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you get to, you claimed him last year. Our situation is, I claim Marlo every year. He claims Lita.
Okay.
This is a pro tip. I would say this to you. Life hack is, I have an accountant who takes care. And also, John, you don't have a corporation, do you?
I do not, no. Which might change, but for now, yeah.
My recommendation, if you work for yourself and intend to continue working for yourself as a freelancer, all of the consultation that I've been given over the years is to make a corporation. And there's several ways to do it. It eases your tax burden a bit.
Okay.
It eases your liability tremendously. And it's a little bit of an investment, but it's worth it. And I pay an accountant every year to manage my taxes and to tell me and sort of predict what I'm going to owe ahead of time, so that I don't suddenly panic and go, oh, I don't have that many thousands of dollars to pay the government.
Yes.
He is on top of everything. And so I don't have to fill out a single piece of paper other than a check that I write him at the end of the year.
And I have an accountant, and she has been fantastic. There was a point when I first started freelancing where we talked about the corporation, and I'd have to go back and look, but I think it was her recommendation early on was to not do it immediately, because it would be better to see how everything shaked out.
Yeah.
Or shook out, as it were. And I think then we just haven't discussed it since, but it is something that I'd like to do. I mean, having an accountant, I think when you work on your own is, oh my God, it's worth whatever they charge you. It just is. Yeah. It makes it a lot easier. Even if I could do it on my own, I know everyone says, well, TurboTax is super easy, but it's not. There's always like a handful of questions and you really don't know how the hell to answer them at all. And there's this nagging fear that, you know, if you answer it the wrong way, somehow you're going to owe more. Or you're going to get hit with this. Something is going to happen because you did it wrong. I know that with an accountant, they know how to answer all of the questions.
All of the questions. My accountant is, I've known him now for 13 years. He's gay and very politically liberal, but fiscally extremely conservative. So he doesn't do anything creative to get me out of anything. He's just like, by the book. Like, we are going to pay everything that you owe because this is not only the right thing to do, but this is the thing that's going to keep you out of jail. Got it? Got it. Good. Awesome.
There's no fun in that, though.
There's no fun in that, but then he'll... I hope he's not listening to this. Then he'll break out a photo of like some really, really, really inappropriate joke about like Clinton giving Obama a blowjob or something like that. Like he's he's very, very inappropriate times. But when it comes down to money, like he's like, this is how it has to happen. And this is what, you know, what we do. And he'll call me up and he'll say, if we put this amount of money in your SEP, then you can deduct this amount of money from your taxes. But this is, you know, he's very, very on top of things. And thank God for him. It costs money for an accountant, but it saves so much in worry.
Yeah, I'm no good at it. My accountant used to babysit me when I was 5.
What?
So, oh yeah. I mean, it's a
woman, right? Yes. She used to babysit you when you were 5. This is weird. What?
Oh yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, I've known her forever.
Have you guys gone on a date?
No, she's my parents' age, a little younger. No. 3 kids. Yeah, I think 2 of her question. Kids are in college now.
Yeah.
No. No, purely professional. But she's kind of the same. She's very liberal, but she's, you know, every time I ask a question, you know, can we do this? Can we take this approach? Which I did the first year. Like my questions gradually have just decreased almost to the point where I just say, here are my documents. Do what you need to do. Mm-hmm. And she'll always come back. She's like, yeah, we can try that, but that's a little shady. So if you want to do that, you're going to have to do this on your own. I'm like, okay, no, I don't need that risk. But it's been great. But even in this case, I mean, she can get absolutely everything prepared. And now it's just waiting until we know if I'm going to claim Lexden or not.
The wait. It's the wait.
Yes.
The wait that you're like, is this wait going to cost me thousands of dollars or not? Yes.
Yeah. So that's always fun.
Through therapy and just through some self-awareness, finances and money are probably at the top of my list of things that stress me out. Worrying about having enough money. You know how people who grew up in the Depression, like my grandmother used to save, like she would have a whipped cream, like whipped cream. She'd buy it at the grocery store and she would finish the whipped cream and she would keep the container. She would wash out the plastic container and keep the container. And when she was living with my mom, like my mom discovered under her bed, like all of these plastic containers from food that had been eaten. And then she would clean out the containers because she was worried that they wouldn't have enough containers. Like they're always worried. Like she would save the crusts of bread because they didn't have enough food to eat. And I think I'm a product of my father, who has never carried debt in his life and gave me many, many, many lectures about living within my means and being frugal. And he's the biggest miser that ever lived. We'll just be honest. But I think how are you with money?
How am I with money? I would probably give your dad a run for his money in terms of being a miser.
Are you a miser?
I'm not that, I've gotten better. I am kind of a miser with things, with stuff. I'm not so much a miser with experiences, with doing things.
Like you don't buy things.
No, I avoid, there has to be an actual need, not like I have 4 pairs of shoes and I need one more. That's not a need, that's a want. But you know, my shoes have a hole in them and now I need shoes. Then I will purchase something. And part of that is just because I don't want to accumulate stuff, which I know we've talked about. But I was also raised in a family that did not have a lot of money at all. So it's sort of this both subconscious and conscious effort to not go down that road. Mm-hmm. And there is this constant, it's not a fear, but a constant stress over money. I mean, I don't know where this quote came from, and it's probably from something totally different. But I heard once someone said that money is like air. It's never a problem until you don't have enough. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, I mean, there's a lot of people that say, oh, money doesn't really matter. It's not, but that's because they have enough money to keep moving forward. If you don't have enough money to buy food, you don't have enough money to, you know, pay the rent or the mortgage, then money is a big problem. And I just, you know, I'd rather be a miser than have like this, oh shit moment. I don't have enough to pay my rent.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's a balance for sure, but I would say that finances occupy good Lord, a very, very large quadrant of my brain.
Yeah.
I had like rent, healthcare, food, rent, healthcare, food, rent, healthcare, food.
If you didn't buy an iPhone, though, you could probably swing the healthcare.
I could probably swing the thousands of dollars in medication that I have to take a month in order to combat my depression and anxiety. Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be about just 7 or 8
swap
iPhones.
Swap your phone out at the pharmacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. A month. 7 or 8 a month. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Just gobbling up those. Just like gobbling. I'm just eating iPhones like the like the Cookie Monster. Oh my God.
I think it's just like, it's an awareness. Like, you know that finances occupy a big part of your brain. I know that too. And I mean, I have friends who say, I don't really care. But again, I think it's just, they're not quite as aware of how it is going through their head.
Yeah, I was, and this is no, there's no judgment for me on anybody who, you know, the way I manage my money is my own personal oddity. It is odd. I am an oddity because my mom sometimes looks at me and she's like, you're going to be fine. Stop worrying, you know, because I'm not a miser when it comes to experiences. I'm just a miser in my head going, oh my God, we're all going to die alone and homeless if I don't meet this deadline. Seriously, if I don't meet the deadline, then I'm going to lose my job and then we're all just going to die homeless and alone. But I have had conversations with friends and my friends are like, yeah, I have like, you know, $30,000 on that one credit card. And then I have my student loans that I still haven't paid off. And they're talking about, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm thinking I'm going to throw up. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Like the thought of credit card debt literally makes me like, I start to hyperventilate thinking about carrying credit card debt. I carried credit card debt once in my life when I bought a computer in the year 2000. I remember this.
You remember specifically like the day, the time.
Yeah, I ordered a computer and with the big monitor, the huge, gigantic monitor.
Oh yeah. State of the art.
But I had to have a computer and I remember I'm going to put this on my credit card and I gave myself 5 months to pay the whole thing off and I did. But I haven't ever since then. It just, the idea of owing money and then accruing, what's the word? It's interest, accruing interest on that money. Oh man. Oh God. Finances really stress me out. Super.
Student loans are the, oh God.
See, that's why I stuck it out at BYU. That's why I stuck it out at BYU. BYU, I had the scholarship and even then the it was so cheap.
Yeah.
I'm really fucked in the head because of it, but.
But you don't have student loans.
Don't have student loans.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's if I've already spent the money, like on a credit card, for example, if I've already bought something on a credit card, then I have to pay that money back to the credit card because I already spent it. Like I can't. Some people say, I'll just let it be for a few months. I can't do that.
Mm-mm.
It's just kind of haunting, and I get this fear anytime. And this is, I mean, it is a fear. Now that you've used that word, like if I buy $50 pair of shoes, I immediately start to do this doomsday run around in my head where if I bought these shoes and then if tomorrow I lose all of my clients and I have no work, I'm not going to have any money. And this $50 could possibly buy food for a few days. Like that's how I process it. It's completely irrational, but that's how I look at it. So I always have to just squirrel away everything just in case, which is not entirely stupid, but there's a point where it becomes just absurd.
Well, there's a lot of just in cases with kids, you know?
Oh my God, yeah.
I mean, stuff pops up and you're just like, oh, good Lord. Marlo has to get her tonsils out. Like she really needs to get her tonsils out. And we're doing that at the beginning of March. And it's not an elective surgery, but on top of the premiums for healthcare, and then it's a lot of iPhones. It's a lot of iPhones to pay for her tonsils.
Oh yeah.
But like fees at school and pop up and my car won't start pops up. You know, those little things add up. And we are talking from a standpoint of privilege where we don't have to worry about where our next meal is coming from.
Right. These things pop up and we are able to take care of them. Yeah. I mean that it is a privileged place. I mean it doesn't help necessarily alleviate the concern. And I feel like every time I just make the decision to purchase something, that's when the car breaks. It's like karma's way of being like, oh yeah, you fucked up. Here's an $800 car bill. Hope you like the shoes. Just inevitably. Mm-hmm. Even with needs, though, I always feel that way. Like if I really need something and then something else that's a more pressing need comes up, still feel the same like weird guilt.
You know, I don't have any guilt about, I do get guilt when I'm I purchased a new pair of tennis shoes. I think I may have talked about this. After the marathon, I wanted a nicer pair of tennis shoes, and I went and I splurged on a really nice pair of tennis shoes, and it was really hard. It was super, super, super difficult because it wasn't an experience, and it wasn't for my kids, and it wasn't rent. It was like, here's a new, really soft, really expensive pair of tennis shoes that are really nice. Like, that gives me pause. But when it comes to like, okay, so my nephew is going on a mission to San Antonio, Texas. He leaves next week. And my sister has to get, here is the Mormon lesson for this week's Manic Rambling Spiral.
Does it come with a song?
Here he goes. Hold on. I hope they call me on a mission when I have grown a foot or two. I hope by then I will be ready to teach and preach and work like missionaries do.
Oh my God, I honestly didn't think there would be a song. Holy shit.
To teach and preach. He leaves next week, and there is a lot that they have to get him for leaving. He has to buy like three very nice suits that he'll be wearing. He has to have a bicycle because Mormon missionaries ride bicycles, and he's large. He's 6'4". He's a big dude. So they need like a really durable bicycle. He also has to have, they're requiring now, I think, certain technology that he has to have. They have this gigantic list, and you know, my sister has 5 kids, and both she and her husband work full time, and they're trying to make it. So the family took a look at the list, and we're all pitching in and buying this kid, you know, his iPad, and here's this other application that he needs. And I got him a camera that he's going to take, and I got him a really fancy razor for his face. And like, loved spending that money, even though I don't agree with what he's doing.
But you support him.
I support
for
him.
For you, it's more about him than what
this
he's
is,
doing.
This is monumental. This is the first kid in the family, the grandkid in the family, who's going on a Mormon mission. This is huge. It's monumental. He's so excited. This is a wonderful thing for my sister. She has to say goodbye to her baby boy. And it was delightful to buy those things. I was so happy. And it was like, and then I compared it to like buying the shoes, and I was like, wait a minute. Maybe it's the cause behind the money that I'm okay with. You know, the cause is I'm helping out a family member. That doesn't bother me at all.
It's like you're buying things for an experience, though.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, I don't know. Spending money on other people has never bothered me at all. I don't know why.
Let me ask you this question. Do you pick up when you, well, you do, you don't, you haven't started dating.
Right.
Yeah. Because I'm finding men to be very cheap.
Really? Like, they expect you to pay?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes they won't even reach for their wallet. You know, they won't even reach to split the bill. Yeah. It's been an interesting experience.
No, I would pay. I'll meet friends for coffee and pay.
I know.
That, I'm surprised, honestly.
Yeah, I was surprised. I think maybe it's this feeling that, you know, she's a feminist. She's going to want to take care of this. It's like, I would appreciate like meeting me in the middle. That would be great.
There's a certain point where if you offer to pay, you know, you're not going to sit there and fight over who's going to pay. Then you just say, okay, let's split it, or I'll pay and you leave the tip or something. But you have to offer. Or even if you don't really want to offer, you have to make it look like you're going to offer. I mean, come on, at least reach for the wallet.
Yeah.
I don't know. That just seems kind of crazy.
When people ask me to support causes, or, you know, they're raising money for something by doing a half marathon or whatnot, those are, I really don't think twice about those. I enjoy supporting friends and causes, but clothing my own feet, I have a really hard time with.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird dynamic, I guess, to be so frugal, but only with yourself. Mm-hmm. The opposite would be pretty selfish, but it is odd when you think about it. Because when you look at other expenses, you can rationalize it. But then when you look at it for yourself, it becomes really irrational.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have friends who can walk into, you know, a store and buy themselves hundreds of dollars worth of clothing, and they don't blink. And there's a part of me that is like, how did you do that?
Teach me.
Teach me. How did you do that? That's incredible.
And I think that's in part like that constant fear, or I don't know, just the constant awareness, the fact that it's always in my head. And then to think, you know, tax season is here. And for me, I just like to get taxes done like quickly. I know some people wait until like tax day. I don't, just because I know if I do, something's going to happen. It's going to be late. There's just, I don't do that. I like to get them done.
Yeah. I pay quarterly with the corporation.
Yeah. I paid quarterly 2015, I think. And then not last year. I don't remember why. And I'm definitely going to pay quarterly again.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely going to pay quarterly again. But now, because I can't file, or I guess I should say I could just decide that she can claim him and I just want to be done with it and yada, 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 yada. But it's not a minor difference. So now I have to, A, wait and just know that taxes are sitting there, which just because of who I am makes me nervous. I don't like it. And B, wonder if I'm going to suddenly owe thousands more than anticipated.
So what are you going to do?
I don't know. We get along well enough that we have thrown around the idea that let's look at who would benefit more from claiming him and then find a way to split that benefit.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah, which could solve it. I mean, it would mean neither one of us really gets the full benefit of claiming him ever, but neither one of us misses it either. I don't know. I think it would make sense, and it would probably flip from time to time, and then we wouldn't really have to argue it. But I have an accountant, and she does them herself. And because of how I am, I don't like doing it yourself because I don't think it's as accurate. So that always makes me nervous.
Yeah. Again, people talk about being nervous about taxes, and I'm like, get an accountant.
Yeah.
It's a language that I don't want to learn. I don't want to learn accounting. I don't want to learn it. Mm-mm.
Yeah. I'm not going to try to fix my car. I could probably stumble my way through it, depending on what it was. But there's someone who already knows how to do it really well.
Yes.
So I rely on them because I want to be able to stop my car. Same with taxes. I don't want to deal with you made some major error and now you're being audited and you're totally screwed. I hope you enjoyed saving money with TurboTax. I don't know. And I know a lot of people love it and have success with it, and that's fine. I'm totally not judging anyone. But for me, I think part of it is I'm not confident with it. And then I panic and then probably make more mistakes because of that. And then it's just this, it's a spiral.
It is. I was supposed to write the government a really huge check back, I think it was in September, to finish off my taxes it was just a final check for 2015, I think. I don't remember. He does my taxes. And
like your fourth quarter payment, yeah, or something. Okay.
And we had gone back and forth about whether or not I wanted to put money into retirement to save on taxes. And we finally figured out how much I owed. And I'm not blaming him for this, although he did say that he took the blame for it. He didn't send me the official email saying, here's the slip that you need to put in the mail with your check to the IRS right now. So we agreed on the amount that they owed the government. And then I was waiting for him to tell me to send the check. And I think he thought that our conversation agreeing to the amount was his way of saying, go ahead and send that to the government. So like a month later, I emailed him and said, hey, were you going to send me something about, you know, paying that those taxes? And he was like, oh, here's the slip. Send it immediately. So like, 2 weeks later, I get a note from the Utah State Tax Commission, because it was state taxes. And because it had been paid late, I owed an extra $700.
Holy God.
Just, you know, one of those, you know, just an extra $700 lying around. So I contacted my accountant and said, what's going on? And he's like, let me take care of this. So he sent a formal complaint to the, well, he, an appeal to the Utah State Tax Commission on my behalf. And it was under review. And while it was under review, I get a call from the Utah State Tax Commission. And she's like, where's the $700? It's now $750 because you still haven't paid it. And I'm like,
oh my God.
I said, what's your name? And let me get your number and let me call my accountant. So I call my accountant and he's furious. And he called the Utah State Tax Commission and gave him an earful because they're not supposed to call anybody who's under an appeal. This goes on and on. And so by the end of the appeal, I think it was something like I owed $790. They denied the appeal. That was fun.
So it went up by 90 bucks for nothing.
In the time that I was, yeah. So $790 as a penalty for not paying on time. It's just a little penalty for not paying my taxes on time. But my accountant, he was like, you know what, we'll deduct that from anything that you owe me for preparing your taxes. So he took the hit there. But like those little things can happen even with an accountant.
Right. And at least he tried to appeal.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't have known what to do at all. I would have just paid it because I'd have no idea. And granted, your appeal was rejected, but maybe it wasn't rejected. And then you saved the money. And you actually had that chance.
I see the Utah State Tax Commission on the outside of an envelope, and I get the anxiety shits, man. Like, I have to run to the bathroom. I hate seeing those words on an envelope. I hate seeing the IRS on an envelope. It's like, oh God, what are they going to do?
And it's not, I know we have texted about this. It's not that we have a problem paying taxes. Like, that's not it. Because I know that there's going to be someone, well, I thought you were liberals and liberals like taxes and government and blah, blah.
I live on a budget and there's a budget for certain things. And when something like that comes along and just, you know, takes my feet out from under me, it's like, okay, an extra 790 right there. Boom, gone. Okay.
Right. It's the surprise of taxes. That's what it is. Because you don't know. You know, when you open your cable bill every month, you know more or less what it's going to be. You know, theoretically, it's the same with your cell phone, roughly with your electric and gas. You have an idea, but you get a letter like that, and you're like, oh, God. Mm-hmm. Is it a notice? Is it a bill?
Yeah.
Is it a check? Which it's not.
Are they going to arrest me if I don't send this in today?
Yeah. What was late? Like, that's always what I think. Like, what? Oh, shit. What did I miss? Mm-hmm. Like, I missed something. They have no reason to mail me anything. Mm-hmm. And that for me, what was hard about this year's taxes is just because, and I guess I will take the responsibility for that, for not like addressing this last tax season. You know, I'm claiming him. What are we going to do next year? And she did know that I was claiming him. But the fact that I kind of went through all of last year, like just assuming I would claim him and then, well, maybe not. It's the surprise. That's what it is. Had I known, I probably would grumble slightly, but I would at least have been mentally prepared for it.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'd still freak out.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So you still don't know what you're going to do?
No. Theoretically, we talked about it a few days ago. We're going to try to get it resolved in the next week or two. And it's totally out of my hand. Like, everything, all I have to do is call or email my accountant and say, this is what I'm doing. Go. And it's done. All of my documents, everything is prepared. It's just waiting for her to do it.
So you have to be done. You have the April 15th deadline, right?
Right.
Okay.
Which you don't as a corporation? Is that what you mean?
No. I mean, people talk about April 15th, and as a corporation, because I do quarterlies, my accountant handles it. Yeah.
But what if, so you pay, quarterlies are an estimate, right? But let's just say theoretically you didn't pay enough. Mm-hmm. Does April 15th mean anything to you then?
No.
Okay, interesting.
I don't know what trickery magic he pulls. He does it by the books, but he makes it so that he just calls me at a certain point and says, expect to pay this much at this time. And then he calls me and he says, you need to pay this now. I just trust him with my life.
Obviously he's good at it.
He's given me every recommendation. Like, he gave me a recommendation for a realtor. He gave me a recommendation for a house painter. He gave me a recommendation for people to install wood floors back at the old house. Oh my God.
So you've been with him a really long time and he's kind of the everything go-to person.
Yes. I called him when Obamacare, since we're talking about healthcare a little bit, when Obamacare first launched, I was on a healthcare plan that a high risk pool. Both me and both girls were on that high risk pool, and the high risk pool because of Obamacare was going to cease to exist at the end of, was it 2014 or 2013? We should know this. This is a historic piece of legislation. And I couldn't get through the fucking website. You know, I will be the first. I am the biggest Obamacare proponent, and I'll be the first to say that it is so fucked up in so many ways.
Oh, yeah.
Beginning with that goddamn website. I could not get into the website. And whenever I did get into the website, it would tell me that that something was wrong, even though the information was right. I couldn't get in to get healthcare. So I called my accountant and I said, you are the person that I go to for everything. He recommended a broker to me. And so I met with an insurance broker who got us healthcare with a plan. I didn't take any subsidies is the thing. It's Obamacare in the sense that it's a regular healthcare plan and they can't deny me because of pre-existing conditions. That's basically my Obamacare. There's no subsidies or anything like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. And it has gone up over 150% since in those 4 years, the premiums. Yeah. It's super fun.
See, it's fun. It's fun. Finance is always fun.
Mm-hmm. But I have health insurance.
And I have a tax mystery, so.
Woo.
But that is something that's on my list of things that I would like to try and get resolved this year, is some sort of something or other somehow in writing about finances.
Yes. And in a little note here about doing that while you're separating and getting divorced, it's not fun at all. Especially if you've been in business with the person you're separating and divorcing.
It's not fun.
And I will say this, divorce in that instance can be really fucking expensive.
Yeah. But you did it up front, which is the one nice thing, I think, right?
Okay. It was an ongoing debacle, nightmare from fucking hell. It was not fun. And it went on and on and on and on. And here's where I give a shout out to Ms. Kelly Williams, who stuck it out for over a year to make sure that I didn't go bankrupt. Boom. Yeah.
She had like a moderate. What is she?
She's a lawyer who helped me. She helped me out.
But it took a while, right, to come to, I'm just going to use the word agreement on how it would all work out. But that's sort of when you get divorced, since I've never been divorced, that's part of what's figured in. Like, we have to figure out finances.
Yeah. And it can be super easy. I know a lot of people who, you know, it's super easy. They had an agreement, boom, done. Mine was not that.
I think on my end, it would probably be on the easier side of the spectrum, but I never know. And there's part of me, I don't really like conflict, which is why I don't have one at all, because I don't really want to bring it up, because I don't really want to attempt to cross that bridge.
Ah, okay.
Which is ridiculous. I think, you know, once we did it, it would be great, probably for both of us.
It would be great. You really need something in writing.
Something. There needs to be something. But you know, like most things, easier said than done.
The number of times I have referred to the written document, John.
Yeah.
With the H. The number of times I have referred to the written document and said, see page 7, section 4C. That right there. Do you see that?
You know that section specifically?
Do you remember that section? Go read it again.
I feel like we've talked about this a couple times, that there's, in some ways, there's that advantage to actually having a divorce, because there are things in writing agreed to. Now, yeah, I could have, you know, made sure that I had all of the same things in writing, but it's like an extra step. Whereas when you get a divorce, that's kind of all part of the process.
Yes.
So for me, it would be, we're separated. Now let's talk about finances. And I mean, that's why I left everything, because I didn't even want to deal with that, except
you
for the Ottoman.
The Ottoman.
Except for the fucking Ottoman. God. Yeah. But it was easier. And even aside from this, aside from like this tax surprise, it hasn't been difficult. It's been easy because I just assume that I'm going to pay for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's easier, which is, saying it is absolutely stupid. I know that, but there's no confrontation.
Yes, but you really, really, really do need to know your rights. I am I avoid confrontation like the plague. And my one piece of advice to every single person that I've ever come in contact with who's getting separated or divorced is like, know your rights. Know them. They're very, very important. Oh, how I wish I had educated myself more.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, in hindsight, I think there's probably things that I could have figured out in advance that I didn't. I mean, for the most part, I understand where I have rights and where I don't. But I think that's where the hesitancy comes in, because I tend to tread very lightly in some areas to not disrupt the balance. It's easier to disrupt. So I guess, for example, if you have a divorce and you have court documents and you can refer to Section 7C, for example, whatever. It's there. It's in writing. It's from the court. Now, someone can decide not to listen to it, right? They can decide not to abide by it or whatever, but there are repercussions for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And both sides have to follow it.
Like, right.
You know, maybe Section 7C is in your favor. And even if John doesn't like it, he has to do it. And even if he really doesn't like it and he gets super pissed off, he can't really do anything.
He agreed to it.
Right.
It was an agreement. Yes.
Yes. And a legally binding agreement. So it's the legally binding step that I would probably struggle to get to successfully. So then I feel like we're just kind of making a handshake agreement, which is not, it's not going to, I don't know.
It's not going to.
It's not worth it. I mean, I guess it's possible that if we just wrote everything down and it was just a little separate agreement between the two of us, maybe it would hold up. I'm not saying that if we agree on something that she goes behind my back, that's not what I'm implying, but it's less finite than an official court document. So there's always room to wiggle or room to say, okay, fine, I'm going to do that because we agreed on that, but then I'm going to do this. Whereas,
and you want that wiggle room?
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't?
I want it to be, this is what we agreed on, and this is what we're going to do.
I thought you were getting it that you wanted the wiggle room.
No, I mean, there's enough. I am like surrounded by and swimming in a gray area. And I don't, I'd kind of rather keep some of that gray than not. And if I try to get black and white in some areas, then it becomes black and white everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, yeah, in some ways I'm trying to keep wiggle room, sort of. And just by Heather's very nature, she is a black and white person. And that's not bad. There are people that are just black and white. So there's not like a halfway point, really.
So you still don't know what you're going to do?
Nope. Swimming in the gray. Good times.
Good times.
And there is just a huge part of me that just feels like emailing my account and being like, just file, don't claim him, I don't care. I just don't want to think about it anymore.
It would, yeah, you would know that you owe that those extra thousands of dollars. Yeah,
that would be fun. But if we can come to a compromise where we say, you know, who will benefit the most, and then how can we share that benefit in whatever. But I mean, that's what's so hard when you work for yourself. It's like I owe or I owe more. Like it's not like all of a sudden I'm getting money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people get a tax refund.
Yeah, I remember the days of tax refunds. Remember that?
I remember liking tax season because I would get a refund.
I know.
Like I remember like,
what am I gonna
way
buy
back
with my
in
tax
high school.
Refund? Free money.
Yeah, like, oh my God, $700. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so far distant past.
Yeah, I'll share this. The first year that my website did really, really, really well, with ads. I got a call from my accountant and he was like, you need to write this amount of money to the government this week. And
this week? So this was like an urgent call.
Yeah, because he, you know, we had given him access to our, you know, our numbers and whatnot. And he saw, because it was really taken off. This is like back in 2008 when things sort of exploded very quickly. And you have to be on top of that stuff. You have to be on top of that shit. He was giving me an urgent call and he's like, you need to write a check for this amount to the government. And I was like, what? Holy shit.
Well, that was like the first actual year of success.
Yeah.
So you didn't really know what the hell to expect at all.
No, did not expect that number. No. No, I had to like, I was actually in Palm Springs with my friend Carol and visiting one of her friends, and he called me there and I had to get up and like take a walk, or we were in a timeshare and had to walk around the block. I was like, I don't know if I want to make money. If I have to write the government that kind of check, holy shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'd much rather the refund.
Those were good days.
And I remember when I was paying quarterly, the one year that I paid quarterly, my accountant I made a comment like, it'd be great to pay too much because then I'll get money back. You know, I was just kind of thinking out loud. And she's like, no, you don't want to get money back and you don't want to pay any extra.
Yes.
I'm like, exactly. No, I want a check. She's like, no, you don't. You want a zero. Okay, well, that's not nearly as cool as like $1,000 check from the IRS.
No, I remember being in college and getting like maybe $170 back. And I was like, what am I going to do with all this money? What? $170. Yep. Oh my God, I could do this. I remember this. Yep. Somebody asked me the other day, because everybody in Utah knows everybody. One of my first jobs in Utah was for this guy that he owns this huge, huge, huge business down in Utah County. Yeah. I'm not going to mention his name or his company because I'm not going to give him shit.
So it was a good job.
So yeah, he was one of my first employers. It was like one of my first web design jobs in Provo, Utah, before I went out to LA, making $13 an hour. I was just like, what am I going to do with all of this money? I'm making so much money. What am I going to do? It was just like $13 an hour. It was amazing.
I mean, that's pretty good, especially considering when.
1998. That was before you went to LA. Yeah, 1998. Yeah. That was the going rate for a beginning entry-level web designer.
It's changed a little bit.
I was making $7 an hour taking phone calls for Delta Airlines. $7.11 an hour. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, man. You doubled your pay.
But I did get refunds from the government, man. Those were fucking awesome.
That would simplify things right now. Mm-hmm. Life isn't easy, so here we go.
Life isn't easy. Just quit.
Just quit. There we go. That is a life hack. Life isn't easy. Just quit.
By the way, I just want to say this here at the end of this episode. It has been a really, really, really another intense week. I had a 2-day, 2.5-day offsite meeting with Farm Forward while my child is she's going to a play every single night for 10 nights in a row. And on the first day of the offsite, they had to play at Federation, which is a piano competition, not a competition, but they have to play two pieces in front of judges. So in the middle of all of the move and everything that happened during the move and then approaching the play, my kids had to go and perfect two solo pieces to play in front of judges. Yesterday was a really, really, really intense day. And I get a text message from the piano teacher. And the first thing she says is, Marlo got a superior. And I literally fell on the floor. Literally collapsed into the floor. Just
for a good reason, though.
For a very great reason. Like, Marlo Armstrong. Marlo Iris Armstrong. Marlo fucking Armstrong. My little 7-year-old got a superior. Lita also as well got a superior. And it just was one of those moments where it's like, okay, everything might be okay. Like, I can't believe that in all of this that my kids pulled it off. And man, that was a good text. That was a great text.
Says a lot about even though it's been chaotic. And I think I mentioned this last week, like, obviously you've held everything together with such cohesion that, I mean, they know there's change, but they're not as affected by it as they could be.
Yeah. I'm doing the best I can to provide the most stability I can, and fucking superiors, man. I'm so proud.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And to think they've been practicing on the piano that just barely fit.
Barely. It is the entire living room. My living room is a piano. That's it.
And now practice is a family affair.
Practice, you cannot escape the piano. Coco has tried to escape the piano, and she comes down, she goes in the basement and just goes in circles, like, make her stop.
Oh, man. And it's times two every day.
Yeah.
And poor dog.
Yeah.
Well, she's lucky they're good. If they were not good, that mm-hmm. would be... You both
imagine
are
imagine if they were horrible. Playing the violin. No.
Oh, God.
No.
Oh. Or even a reeded instrument like a saxophone or a clarinet.
Or the drums. No.
Or the drums. I was awful at the flute. I can tell you that's pretty bad to hear, too.
We just spiraled into the flute.
That's how it works.
Yeah. Ending on a high note. Because you know what?
Look at that.
Heather's going to work with you, and you guys are going to figure something out that works. We're not all going to die alone, bankrupt and homeless. We're going to pay our taxes. We're going to stop worrying unnecessarily. The world will continue spinning.
Even if we buy those shoes.
We would love to hear your financial stories, be it fairy tales or horror. Send us your comments to stories@manicramblings.com. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @manicramblings, right? I got all of those right.
Correct. Yeah, you're good at those.
Until next time, claim the kid on your taxes, dude. Claim the kid.
Just claim and don't even ask.
That's not a good idea. Not a good idea. Many thanks to Tan Lines for the soundtrack, to Lisa Congdon for the cover art, and to Ryan Coomer for his expertise with the editing stuff.
When we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.